Hey, nosy neighbors, it's Kylie.
And I'm Mary.
And you're listening to Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast. Hey, Mom.
Hey, neighbors.
Oh, sorry. Hi, neighbors. I greeted my mother first because we're in person.
We are in the same room.
So, if it's a little different, that's why.
It's hello, new neighbors and old neighbors, and tell your neighbors, and we all want to be neighbors.
Yes, welcome to the hood. It's awesome. We will all have footpaths between each other, and it'll be sunshine and rainbows.
What are you drinking?
I'm just having...
The Juggernaut Pinot Noir?
Yes, the Juggernaut Pinot Noir. It's good. It's good. I usually have their Cabernet Sauvignon, so this is a little sweeter, but I still like it. Gotta have them while today was like unusually cool.
This morning.
Coming from the north, I was like, what? Frost?
It's on the windshield.
So have a red to enjoy with it from a local spot. So tonight, we are going to Louisiana.
Ooh, Raging Cajun.
Michael Allen Lacaze was born on July 5th, 1955, just south of Natchitoches, Louisiana.
Is that pronunciation correct?
Yes, I wrote it out phonetically because it is spelled not like that. It's actually named after a Native American tribe. And fun fact, it is the original French colony in Louisiana. It's the oldest settlement in the Louisiana Purchase, established in 1714.
Wow.
Several films have taken place there, including one of our favorites, Steel Magnolias.
Love that movie.
Mike Lacaze grew up with three siblings, and he knew he wanted to be a cowboy from a very early age. Natchitoches is located on the western side of Louisiana and is more like Texas than New Orleans.
Huh.
So he was always out with the rest of the cowboys in town, and by high school he could easily rope cattle and saddle a horse. He even rode bulls for a while just to show off to people that he could do it.
Do you know how they get the bulls to buck?
How?
They have a rope around their balls and they pull the rope tight.
Oh my God. God.
Yeah, it squeezes all their junk.
Oh my, right before they go out there?
Mm-hmm.
So that poor thing is just in pain.
Yes, that's why they buck.
Oh, that poor thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's terrible.
That's not very, very nice, people. It's not very nice.
Where's PETA on that? Come on. So one day when Mike was getting off the bus after school, he caught the eye of a young girl named Rhonda Sanders.
Okay.
It was love at first sight for Rhonda. And in June of 1974, just after Mike's graduation, the couple got married. Rhonda was 14.
Oh, wait, what?
Yes, she was 14. So she was born in 1960. But they were in love. And I don't know if it's a normal thing in the early 70s or what the legality is there. But a 14 and 18-year-olds got married.
Wow. You'd think that'd be statutory, right?
Uh-huh. But they were in love, and it was like an innocent thing. Like, Mike was very funny and playful. The couple had two children, Michael Jr., born in 1978, and William, born in 1981.
So she was 18 when her first one was born.
Yeah, so that helps a little, I guess. She's married, but had to go through high school. Like... To support his family, Mike worked for Smith Cattle. They sold cattle, sheep, horses. They said, like, anything with four legs.
Mm-hmm.
Mike was one of the roughest, toughest cowboys that worked for the company, and he was with them for over 20 years.
Wow.
When Mike was 19, he was diagnosed with polycystic kidney disease.
Oh.
PKD is a genetic disorder in which numerous fluid-filled cysts develop in the kidney, causing them to enlarge and lose function over time.
Oh my God.
Yeah, treatments can help manage the condition, but there's still no known cure. Which
kidney transplant.
Right? But then would it just I wonder what...
Well, not if you have different kidneys, right?
I don't...
The disease doesn't...
Doesn't swap. Yeah, it doesn't jump. Mike didn't let the diagnosis slow him down and continued working for Smith and being a great father for his sons. He raised them on their own small type ranch where his two boys rode horses, raised cattle, had chickens and dogs. Yeah, the whole of life. Unfortunately, Mike and Rhonda grew apart over the course of their marriage and divorced in 1990 after 16 years together.
Oh.
Which, like, they said they were married as kids, so they just grew up and became adults.
She turned 40.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're not the same person at 14 as 30. Because, yeah, she was 30.
Oh, my God, she turned 30.
Mm-hmm.
Math.
After the divorce, Mike mainly focused on work. Being a cowboy was his passion, and he worked along his best friend, Marilyn Robinson. But Marilyn is spelled with an E.
Is that a girl?
No, it's a man.
Oh, poor guy.
I know. The two were, quote, like brothers. They were always together and were friends for like the past 20 years. So he still had support. And eventually, in 1992, Mike met Princess Potsmeal, working for her father, Joe.
Her first name's Princess?
Her first name is Princess. At the time, she was a 30-year-old divorcee with three young children. Joe was well-known around town, both as a great farmer and a hothead. Princess was just as her name implies. She and Mike were total opposites. He was a true cowboy with spurs on his boots and a cowboy hat. And she was in, like, designer outfits. Like,
wow. It's like Green Acres, which you probably have no idea.
I don't get the reference at all.
It's a farmer. And then, I don't know if you ever heard of Zsa Zsa Gabor.
No.
Yeah, she was Park Avenue.
Oh, yes. So, yes, exactly. That's exactly what this relationship was. And apparently opposites attract, and the two began dating. On July 3rd, 1993, they were married, which I just found it a little interesting that they got married 2 days before his birthday. Like, the poor dude. Mike took an active interest in her kids, and the couple lived at his modest home out in the country. But tragedy soon struck. In 1997, after 4 years of marriage, Mike's kidney disease took a turn for the worst. To survive, he would need to have a shunt put in so he could receive dialysis because he was going into kidney failure. Mike was a fighter because obviously he's like a rough and tough cowboy. So he was going to get through it however he could and had an appointment on March 3rd to have the procedure.
Okay.
But on the evening of March 1st, just before 7 p.m., his wife, Princess LeCave, called 911. She told the operator she had come home to find her husband in a pool of blood on the kitchen floor. Mike had been shot once in the shoulder by a .30 caliber rifle.
Ugh.
But that shot would be possible to self-inflict, to be shot in the left shoulder with a rifle, like the way you would have to hold it.
Uh-huh.
So they were able to determine that this was homicide.
Oh.
Police knew that the murder had occurred recently, within the last 3 to 5 hours. They didn't find the murder weapon at the scene, but did recover a .30 caliber shell casing in the doorway of the kitchen.
Okay.
Mike had been found laying on the floor face up with his arms above his head. His shirt was off and the TV was on, leading them to believe that he was taken by surprise.
Oh.
The house was in disarray, with the drawers pulled out and emptied on the floor, so investigators considered the possibility of
a robbery.
Yep, robbery gone wrong. The area had had break-ins recently, so it actually wasn't a far-fetched theory. There was not much else to find from the scene to give insight as to what happened. So next, they interviewed Princess, hoping she could shed light on the events for the day. I know, I can't take it seriously. Calling her Princess.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry if there's a princess out there.
Right? It just doesn't make you think of, like, full-grown white woman. Mm-hmm. She claimed she had been working 11 to 5 and then running errands up until she got home around 7 p.m. Princess provided police with receipts that confirmed her alibi. Once she arrived back home, she walked in, saw Mike across the room, and ran out of the house. Which I never think is a good sign, because, yeah.
So she didn't check on him?
Yeah! She said that she called out and he didn't answer her, so she could tell something was wrong, and she panicked and fled.
Yeah, that's not cool.
You would definitely go up to them and be like, hey!
Mm-hmm.
I feel like even if I saw the site, I would be like, you're faking. This isn't real.
Yeah. I mean, I would at least see if they're warm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then look around, like gather as much information as I could. Like, I don't.
Unless she thought the intruder might still be there.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I'd book it too.
If you go in there and feel them and they're fresh and it's like, oh God, like this just happened, I'd flee. Once Princess tells police that Mike was looking forward to the dialysis treatment and eventually feeling better than he was, because obviously he wasn't doing too hot, things were going well between them. Life was normal. Mike had no enemies and she had no idea who would want to kill him. So the most plausible explanation at this point for the police was the robbery theory. Investigators asked Princess to look around and take inventory and report what was missing from the home, but they found that only a few photos had been taken. Which, why would a robber do that? A robber wants things to sell, right?
Yes. I want pictures of Princess.
Yeah! Princess the poodle! One neighbor did report seeing a black Suburban driving around the area at that time.
Okay.
They put out a bolo, but it never came to fruition.
Oh, no.
5 months would pass with no leads or arrests. The case was going nowhere until that September when Princess presented police with what she claimed was Mike's suicide note.
Oh, that she wrote.
On September 12th, she said her husband refused to go on dialysis and did not want to be hooked up to a machine. Did not want to undergo a kidney transplant and essentially had talked about ending his own life. So she put out a theory that perhaps he asked someone to do this. This completely contradicted her previous statements in March about him looking forward to living a new life after treatment. Investigators spoke with Mike's family, who were insistent he would never kill himself. They asked if they knew anyone who would want to hurt him. And that's when they found out about some rumors going around that small town.
Uh-oh. Affair.
Mike's family told detectives that Princess had been seen around with none other than his best friend, Marilyn Robinson.
Oh!
Gossip was that there had been an affair.
No, Marilyn.
So police now have to confirm the rumor. Detectives pulled Princess and Marilyn's phone records and discovered a call made to him from a payphone on the morning of Mike's murder, which is suspicious because this is cell phone time, early cell phone, but still they were there.
But yeah, that's true.
The payphone was en route from the Lacaze home to Princess's job at Walmart, revealing that she had probably made the call, and probably because she had something to hide, because otherwise she would have used her cell phone.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So investigators look at Princess's life since the death of her husband. They find lavish vacation trips to the Bahamas, Caribbean, even Hawaii. Not those ones, but these. She did go out with him to more local things. They went to like Hartford. They went within the United States. Yeah, he didn't get the lavish vacations.
Yeah.
But these were paid for with none other than
life insurance policy.
Yes. It turns out he had 4 policies for $25,000 each.
Oh.
As well as Princess later sold Mike's home, giving her an additional $110,000. And that's in late 90s. I didn't do any sort of conversion
math.
But who knows? You can sell anything in the market nowadays, the way it's going.
$1 million.
Police were super suspicious and certain Princess was involved. By December 1997, she's suspect number one with the insurance payout and affair. Maryland had accompanied Princess on trips to Houston and New Orleans. That's where. Those are super local.
Houston, yeah.
Those are like right over the border. That's zero effort.
Houston's on the... Yeah, that's true. It's on the East Coast.
They just went like a few miles that way and a few miles that way. Wow.
She didn't want to wait to the gas.
But their relationship didn't last. Well, maybe because she didn't take him on the good trips. So she next took up with another friend of Mike's named Simon Sarpy.
Oh.
9 months after Mike's murder, they bring in Simon. Simon says, Simon told them about Princess's affair with Maryland and how it began 2 years prior to Mike's death.
Maryland? You said Maryland with a D.
It is. M-E-R-Y-L-A-N-D.
Oh, I thought you were saying Maryland, like Marilyn Monroe.
I thought you said that because it's the state. This poor man is a misspelling of the state.
Yeah. Okay, that's even worse.
Mm-hmm. Dang. Oh. At least I know, like, random old men who have things like Marilyn. It's a woman's name, too. I think that guy at Holes has that name. Anyways.
That's Marion.
That's my
grandma's name.
That's it. So the affair had been going on for 2 years. Simon said that Princess was worried about the police coming after her.
Simon.
I know, it's so funny. And that she had mentioned to him about a gun being thrown in a local river.
Oh.
Princess was then brought in for questioning, but now had a new story to tell. She said Mike had asked her to end his life, but she couldn't do it. So instead, he asked his best friend, not knowing he was also his wife's lover.
Oh.
So he was like, please, I don't want to go on. And she's like, no, I can't. And so he was like, okay, please, man, I can't go on. And it was like a mercy killing.
Oh, be a bro.
But this story put the entire blame on Maryland and conveniently leaves out any details that might have involved Princess.
Okay.
But the police had enough to get warrants for the arrest of both Princess Lacaze and Maryland Robinson for the murder of Mike Lacaze.
Good.
Mike's family was both relieved and shocked. Not by Princess, but by Marilyn's involvement because they had been so close.
Uh-oh.
Both of them do bond out and are released on bail. But for once, it's not necessarily a bad thing for detectives. They believe that at some point, the exes would have a fallout and they just needed to monitor them and wait for one of them to reveal more details about what went down.
Okay, the waiting game.
Yes. Detectives got their wish on May 14th, 1998. Princess called 911 and said that her daddy was holding someone at gunpoint. And, sorry.
That was your Southern accent.
Yes. Well, it was quoted as her daddy was holding someone at gunpoint. And it's just funny to me that a grown woman is still calling her father daddy. And it's so Southern.
Oh, yes.
So her daddy was holding someone at gunpoint. She was afraid he was going to kill whoever he had out there. So police, knowing he's a hothead, they rush over there and found that the man at gunpoint was Maryland.
Oh, boy.
He was arrested for trespassing and brought in for questioning. And it was there that Maryland told detectives that Princess had invited him over to her home. But that when he got there, her father came at him with a gun.
Oh, yeah. It's a setup.
Yes. Not only had Princess thrown him under the bus, but now he was fearful for his life.
Yeah.
So we told them everything. Marilyn Robinson gave the sheriff a sworn statement that he was the perpetrator and had killed Mike. But not because Mike asked him to.
No, because the bitch did.
Yes, Princess had.
Princess.
Yes, and she had planned everything. Marilyn said Princess was unhappy about Mike's dialysis treatments. She didn't want to take care of him and was tired of being married to Mike.
That's awful.
How sick is that?
For better, for worse.
And in sickness and in health. And he already had he was diagnosed at 19. He had it when they met.
She knew it.
Plus, she knew about his life insurance policies. And she convinced Marilyn that if he killed Mike, they could be together.
Oh.
So he said that on the morning of Mike's murder, Princess called him to confirm the plan. She didn't want to be home until after he was dead. Such a princess thing. And Marilyn confirmed it'd be done that day. Later that afternoon, he asked his 14-year-old son, Rodney, to drive him to Mike's house. Mike was watching television when Marilyn entered through a side door and shot him. And Mike died immediately.
So is the son an accomplice?
We'll get to that. After the murder, Robinson trashed the home to make it look like a robbery. Then he cut up the gun and dumped the pieces into the river. Marilyn took police to where he had thrown the gun, and divers were able to recover remnants from the murder weapon.
Okay.
Marilyn Robinson pleaded guilty to manslaughter and was sentenced to the maximum of 40 years in prison.
Oh.
He also agreed to testify against Princess Lacaze in her upcoming murder trial. In August 1998, Princess Lacaze's trial begins. Marilyn's prosecution star witness. Wait, that doesn't make sense. Marilyn is the prosecution's star witness.
Okay.
And he tells the jury about what happened. Apparently, he was super compelling, very tearful, and very...
Remorse.
Yes.
Remorse.
Yeah, and he explained how he was manipulated to kill his best friend.
Which is something he'll have to live with.
Mm-hmm. Princess takes a stand and sticks to the story that Mike asked to die. She was found guilty of murder in the second degree and sentenced to life in prison without parole.
Wow.
But
that's good.
It doesn't end there.
Oh,
in September 2011, Princess's lawyers file an appeal that revealed Marilyn Robinson's testimony was secured only after prosecutors agreed not to pursue charges against his son.
Oh.
And the ruling was reversed because the defense should have been made aware of that information.
Oh.
Right? What a dumb loophole. She was released from prison to await a retrial. And in the meantime, she worked at her family's meat pie business.
Meat pie?
Which sounds so unappetizing, but man, I love a good shepherd's pie and that kind of deal. Before she could stand trial, Princess Lacaze pleaded guilty to manslaughter in November 2017. She was sentenced to 17 years in prison, but was given credit for time served and would only serve a little over a year back behind bars.
1 year.
Yeah. 1 year remaining.
Oh, for murder.
So she is now out. Yep. Marilyn Robinson.
Not a fan of Princess.
Remains incarcerated. He's currently at the Louisiana Department of Corrections in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Inmate number 248134. He will not be eligible for parole until he is 72 years old.
Are you giving his number in case someone wants to write him a letter?
Oh, I just thought it was a cool detail. Sometimes I try and look people up, but they've got such a common name that you can't find it. But since his name is Maryland with an E.
Oh, yes.
I was able to find his information.
Not many Marylands. Yeah. That's like looking for someone on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime I'm like, oh man, it's a Smith or a Jones, I can't find you. So,
oh, it's Wilma Farfanugan. I can find her.
But yeah, so it's not fair. I hate these cases where the gunman is still in jail, but the mastermind is out.
That just, it makes me upset.
It happens so often.
Let's kick that neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Not a good neighbor.
Knock her out of the neighborhood.
Yes. Listen to your mothers.
And make good choices.
Stay nosy, neighbors. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm Mary.
I'm Kylie.
And you've been listening to Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast.
Be sure to follow us on our Instagram at Sipping with Snapped.
Twitter at Sipping Snapped.
Facebook, Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast.
Join our Patreon, Sipping with Snapped.
And if you forget all that, go to our website,
www.sippingwithsnapped.com.
We've got links to everything.
Cheers.
Logan, say I love you.